You are watching on Alaska Public Television or KUAC-TV, or listening to us on KSK or another public radio station. Now let's meet the Republican candidates for Congress. They are John Cox, Tyree Gales, and Don Young. We'll have 1 minute opening statements starting with Mr. Cox.
Good evening, Alaska. My name's John Cox, and it's a pleasure to try and serve you as your next congressman. I came to Alaska back in the early 70s. I graduated from Bartlett, Go Bears, and I joined the Navy shortly after. After I came back to Alaska, I had a 17-year plan to start running for this position. However, the state of the country does not have 17 years left, and that's why I jumped into this race. I started in 2010. I ran against Mr. Young, and I'm doing it again this time. I'm asking Alaska to give me a chance. Trust me with this country's and it's in our way of life up here in Alaska.
Thank you, sir. Tyree Gales, one opening statement.
How you doing, Alaska? Many of you don't know me, but I'm also here running for the United States House of Representatives. I'm a husband, father of three, an Iraq War veteran, and a constitutional conservative. I'd like the opportunity to serve as your lone congressman or House representative to help Alaska prosper into the future. And when you're going to the voting booths, just remember that this election isn't just about right now. And it's not just about Alaska. It's about our nation as a whole. So let's take this opportunity to make great changes and great strides for the future. Like that old saying goes,
thank you very much, Mr. Gales. We'll come back to that. Don Young.
Thank you, and I do apologize. I've been campaigning so hard in this state, I've lost my voice, so if I sound a little gravelly, accept my apology. And, of course, you know this is Congressman Don Young, congressman of all of Alaska, not all Alaskans. We have differences of opinion. First, let me say I respect these two individuals that just talked. They're running for this seat, and I admire their desire to serve the state. I've been serving you for 40 years, and I continue that because I know I'm the best person for the job. I've worked hard to represent you, and you cannot see a spot in this state. It hasn't been served by me. But my big job is to take and listen to you, and I've been able to do that. Sometimes we differ, but when we do, I hope it's in a civil matter, although I've been accused of being bombastic and a few other things in my life. But the truth of the matter, I believe in this state. I do believe in the nation, but the state is first and foremost in my heart. It always has been and always will be. And I'm asking you for your vote again in the August primary and, of course, in the general election. God bless you.
Thank you, Congressman Young. Now let's meet our panel of journalists. They are Daisy Eaton, who's the South Central reporter for KSK Radio, and Lori Townsend, who is the news director for Alaska Public Radio. Our first question will come from Lori Townsend.
Thank you, Michael. My first question will be for you, Mr. Cox. As a 30-year Navy veteran, should the automatic cuts destined for the Pentagon budget be stopped by Congress or allowed to happen? And if they happen, what impact do you think they would have on U.S. military readiness?
And I neglected to tell you, you have 45 seconds.
45 seconds. Okay, let's back up real quick. It's 29 years, 11 months, 27 days. I don't want the media saying that I'm lying and said 30 years. I was explaining this earlier that it seems like every time that they want to balance the budget, they take it on the backs of the U.S. military, and that's wrong. If you look at a high school, you got the kid in the block that's the biggest kid. He never gets in a fight. Why? Because people are afraid of him. And that's why I believe in a strong military.
Either one of you other candidates wish to jump in here for 45 seconds? Okay. Daisha?
This question is for Mr. Gales. You have a lot of lofty goals, and the history of politics in this country is partly based on compromise. How will you use compromise to achieve your goals?
Well, you know, it comes down to leadership. And when people can see a clear path set before them, it's a lot easier for folks to get on board with what we're doing. And we got to present it to the American people in a way that makes sense. So I'll do that by just providing excellent leadership. And that's something that I've shown as a veteran in the military for so long. So.
Anybody else want to jump in here? Okay. Lori?
My next question is for Mr. Young. Is Social Security in trouble? Some economists say not now and not for a while. And if so, why? And what would you do to fix it?
Social Security itself is not in trouble. The problem we have is we have the Medicare and Medicaid. And Social Security itself should be self-funded if we took care of the other two problems. It's a challenge because it can be actually shown that it can be defunct in a period of time. We have to look at this, and I will tell you very honestly, I do believe Paul Ryans has the right idea. Come up with a new plan. Make it voluntarily. Does not affect anybody who's 55 years of age and older. Does affect younger people. These two young people here would be affected by it. But our biggest problem today is the debt itself, and I agree with Mr. Cox, and I will tell you this. We do have to look at the entitlements in the future to make sure how it will affect the economy. Otherwise, we can't solve this problem. So it will be looked at under Romney and the Ryan budget. It will be looked at.
Anyone else in the group want to comment on Social Security?
I would.
Go ahead, please.
I think Galveston, Texas had a great idea. A lot of their county employees don't fall under the Social Security system as we have it. There's a private investment that they sign up for, and they invest their money with a 3.75 to 4% return on the investment. 13.9% of their income is given into this account. 6.1% from them, 7.8% from the state or from county. So over 40 years, a person who earns $25,000 a year would retire with about $2,297 a month in retirement through this program. On the same hand, someone who earns $125,000 annually would retire and receive $11,490 a month. Whereas in Social Security, no matter how much you earn, there's a cap of about $2,300 or $2,400. And this works.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, Daisha Eaton for Mr. Cox.
Mr. Cox, what makes you think you can do a better job than Don Young?
One of the things I learned in the military, and I couldn't understand this at first, is that we transfer individuals out after a three to four year period. And I believe that when we go to a position, even here in this establishment or any outside business sector, you run into a person that as they come on, they have a peripheral vision of the way things should be doing. They think outside the box. And after a person has been there so long, what happens is that peripheral vision starts to tunnel in. And then you wind up with that tunnel vision. And so that's the way things have been done, and that's the way it's going to be done. And we need to change that policy and that philosophy in Washington as it stands right now.
Okay. Either one of you want to comment on the answer you just heard?
All due respects to Mr. Cox, you know, I'm too far outside the box. I've been doing this for years and know exactly what Alaskans want because I get it from the Alaskans. And my job primarily has been to represent Alaskans, each and every one of them. Even those that disagree with me. And I've done some things in Congress that, very frankly, hasn't done by other congressmen. And you see, I've been heavily criticized over that over the years, but I get it done. And that's the main thing about this job, is getting the job done for the individual Alaskan.
Okay, thank you, Congressman. Lori Townsend for Mr. Gales.
Mr. Gales, you've stated that you'll work to establish energy independence. What does that mean? How can the U.S. be independent when we use so much more than other countries?
Right. Well, what's important is that we actually start utilizing our natural resources, and we don't harvest our natural resources at the capacity to feed ourselves. And so that's a major issue. So we need to first figure out how we're going to do that by opening up the ability to harvest these resources, such as drilling for oil in areas where they're now restricted. So that's very important. But also, we need to start investing in ways to create renewable energy, and we need to encourage renewable energy. So those are ways that will lead us down the right path into energy independence.
Either one of the other candidates wish to comment on this topic?
I'd just like to compliment him. That's what I've been doing. I've passed ANWR 12 times. The Senate has never passed it but once, and that was vetoed by Bill Clinton. And I will tell everybody, we don't use more oil than anybody else now for the young lady. China is using more oil than we are. And they'll continue to use that with the amount of people. We have to start utilizing our fossil fuels and, yes, other forms of energy. we have too many people in this country that are can'ts. We can't do it because it may affect the flulu bird. I don't know whether we got a flulu bird or not, but the fact is they would say we have one, you can't do it. That's where we're in trouble right now. We're still importing, even with the great boom in the Dakotas, importing over 48% of our fossil fuels in this country, and that's dead wrong.
Okay, our final question in this round is Daisha Eaton for Don Young.
And continuing with renewable energy, I know you've been skeptical of some renewable energy projects in Alaska, but the governor has proposed half of the state's energy should be coming from renewables by 2025. What will you do to support that?
Well, again, I support hydropower. It's known and proven and works. We should have the Susitna Dam and the lake across the way, Takamak Lake or whatever you call that thing. We should have enough electricity to supply and replace all the natural gas in the rail belt. We also have the ability to have a wind power, but it's still subsidized, and it's a very small percentage. But we should be using that part of our renewable, hydro. And the Southeast should never burn another nickel of diesel fuel. We could burn fossil fuels in the areas that don't have either wind or hydropower or geothermal, which is very big in this state. But that, to me, is renewable. But we still have to figure out how we move an object. And the best way to move an object is with fossil fuels. And that's where we're working on this independence from the foreign countries. We have to do that. We can do it. We have too many people saying we can't, you can't, you can't. I say, let's do it.
Anybody else want to comment briefly?
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with Mr. Young on this. The concept of renewable energy is a nice dream, and I'm all for it. Except the demand for the energy, the technology is not there. So, yeah, we need to continue digging up all our natural resources that we have within the state so that we can survive. That means going to the outer continental shelves, ANWR. Let's dig holes in. Let's get our natural resources out of there. Let's harvest the timber we got. Let's help out Alaskans. Let's get things moving. And let's stop with all the red tape. Let's get the federal government out of Alaska's hair.
Okay, let's move to our next section of the debate, and that is we have a couple of questions from listeners and viewers who emailed us. We also have a question from your host, the moderator. And my question is, and we'll start with Mr. Cox, then go to Mr. Gales and Mr. Young. Mr. Cox, as a congressman, you may or may not wind up having a significant amount of say or any say over the future of the Pebble Mine. But as an Alaskan, as a member of the community here, we'd like to hear your opinion on the Pebble Mine in 45 seconds or so. Are you for it or against it?
I think that's kind of a wrong question to ask because Pebble Mine doesn't exist yet. And until all the science comes in, to make an educated guess on it would be ludicrous. So to say yay or nay, you can't.
Mr. Gales.
once again, I'm going to have to agree with that. We have to wait for all the information to come out, present it to Alaskans, and Alaskans will make that decision when the time comes.
Mr. Young.
The danger of the Pebble Mine is not to the fish. It's the interference of the federal government making decisions on state land. Again, the president of the EPA may be stopping the Pebble Mine without going through the process. Through the state permitting is a threat to this state. We were given 103 million acres of land for the social and economic will benefit of the people of the state. And if the EPA comes down with their so-called saying that this affects a watershed and it can't be developed, we're no longer a state. And we build an airport, they'll file the same case against it. You build a road, they'd file the same case against it. You do anything, there will be these outside interest groups like Trout's Unlimited. The conservation organization of worst would file a case against it. We might as well become a territory again. And I argue the state ought to be more aggressive. The state itself. The idea that they're being told by the EPA when they put that land up for discovery, and with discovery a right for exploration, and you have the right to develop if it can be allowed through the state, not the federal government. Just get the federal government out of our backyard.
Okay, we now have an email question from John Morris, and we're going to start this time with Mr. Gales. John Morris asks, given the climate is changing rapidly and in Alaska, and a majority of Americans believe scientists when they attribute these changes to human activity, what is your long-term vision for whether society will change its ways in response to environmental crisis, global warming, and what specifically would you do to help?
Well, you know, this happened years ago. I believe it was called global cooling at one time. And I believe it's a natural cycle that the Earth is taking. And scientists are still mixed, and they still have mixed thoughts on exactly what's causing the issue. But long term, what we can do is continue to develop renewable energy sources and more planet-friendly energy sources. So.
Thank you. Mr. Young.
Well, I agree with Mr. Gales here. I will tell you, we've had 11 ice ages, and we are having a warming period of time. I can remember this. I know you're going to grin. In 1933, I was born. It went to 110 degrees in Northern California. Stayed that way for 60 days with no air conditioning and no Pampers. It's a wonder if I'm alive with my mother having me. It was the year of the Dust Bowl in the Midwest, and with the people of Oklahoma and Arkansas all across had to come to California. We are sitting here saying we're the problem of everything, and I will tell you I have as many scientists on the other side which are not listened to and say this is nonsense. This is cycloidic. It is part of the sunspots, and it is, in fact, a disputed effort to say man has caused this. You remember, I was in New Mexico, and it was 278 feet of ice in New Mexico, and it melted all the way to the North Pole before man arrived here. So let's think about this a while, but this is the political correct thing to say we're going to solve the problem, we as human beings. That's pure nonsense. And by the way, that comment is added to, and those that write those type of questions aren't reading. They should start reading.
Okay, now we'll go to Mr. Cox for his 45 seconds.
The science is not there to prove that man is creating global warming, cut and dry. And a lot of this is influenced by the environmentalists. The EPA is a big factor in that. Right now, EPA's philosophy is that zero emissions. Their concept is out of touch with reality. With us just sitting around here breathing, we're creating more of a environmental impact than the EPA likes. History shows that, like Mr. Young and Therese has stated, that it's a cycle of life, and it will continue as long as man is around.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. This question is from Mark Lovegreen. Mark asks, in the system of healthcare today, uninsured individuals usually wind up in the emergency room, and the question is, has that been adequate till now? If not, what do you propose as a replacement? Congressman Young.
Well, again, I think the Obama Act was the worst piece of legislation I've ever been part of, and I voted against it. First place, it was written by Nancy Pelosi. And remember, she said, let's read it, and then we'll find out what's in it after we vote for it. There is already 4,200 regulatory laws under this bill, let alone the Act itself. It will not provide better health care. It's extremely expensive. You study it, and it's probably more expensive in up in the trillions of dollars. We do have some problems. They can take five issues or four issues immediately with a new bill. One is accessibility, pre-existing conditions, pooling of insurance, across state lines insurance, and I believe we'd have better health care. Right now, this bill will not give us better health care. All the doctors say it will not help the health care people. Yes, we can be insured. Doesn't mean you're going to get health care. It does not work under this proposal, and it's up to the American people. No one supports this bill, but the real power-hungry people support it. Those who believe in freedom don't support it.
Mr. Cox.
It needs to be repealed. Okay, when we first heard about this Obamacare, let's call it what it is, I had this discussion with my sister, who happens to be in a physician, and same with her husband. And people have to understand that this was not about health care. This is about the federal government overreaching its authority on our civil liberties, okay? They have opened the gates where they can dictate any and everything that you and I do nowadays in the form of a tax. We have to repeal it.
Hey, Mr. Gales, you have the last word in this round.
I have to agree once again that we do need to repeal Obamacare. You know, And I understand the need for the pre-existing conditions and everything like that. But we all have an opportunity and an obligation to provide for ourselves. And we can't always count on the government to do that for us. And I wouldn't want to trust the government to do that for me. As a person who participates in the VA healthcare system, I know just how difficult it is dealing with any government-run entity at all, let alone my healthcare.
Okay, this is a segment in which the candidates will be able to ask questions of the other candidates. Each candidate, starting with Mr. Cox, will have 15 seconds for a question to one of his opponents, and the opponent will have 45 seconds to respond, and then the person who asked the question will have about 30 seconds to comment on the answer. We're going to start with you, Mr. Cox, for a question for one of the other gentlemen at the table.
Mr. Young?
Yes, sir.
You knew this
surprise,
was coming, wasn't it?
Surprise, surprise. Go ahead.
Just recently in the news, this is a question that's been posed to me. NDAA, there was a bill on the floor to remove, I believe, Section 1120 and 1121, which keeps American citizens from due process, being detained by the federal government. You voted against it. Can you explain to the viewers why?
I don't want any civilian being processed by the federal government. I'm very upset about that concept and will continue to be. I'm not happy with what's happened since 9/11. We begin to lose our freedoms. And what scares me is a major portion of our population said they were willing to give up some of their freedoms for better security. The bad guys win when that happens, and that's the reason that I voted against that. And I only cast a little over 25,000 votes in my life. That's a lot of votes. And yes, I've missed some. If you're from Alaska, you will miss some, so keep that in mind.
Mr. Cox, you want to comment for 30 seconds?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Gales, you have an opportunity to ask a question to one of your opponents.
Mr. Young, according to a resolution offered by Mr. Cooper of Tennessee and Loretti, I believe, of Ohio.
Lautret.
There you go. Which references the Social Security Trustees Report that Social Security would be exhausted and unable to pay by 2036. And because of this, benefits will be cut by 23% across the board. What are you doing to circumvent this possible issue?
Well, first I voted for the Lautret-Cooper bill. It was the Simpson-Bowles special committee. It came down with a budget that everybody does get affected. And I thought it was time for the Congress to take a position and quit kicking this can down the road, because the budget that came out from the liberals was no good. And very frankly, our budget didn't do the job it should do. By the way, the Senate has never passed the budget in now a little over 1,200 days, so keep that in mind. You want a real problem, get rid of that Senate on the other side and Harry Reid. But that's why I voted that. But I think we should really be talking about the future, about the economy in this country and how we can improve upon it. And we have to recognize the entitlements are one of the major problems in our society today. And to just say, no, we're not going to address that, you won't solve that problem. And so I voted for the Bowles-Simpson Special Budget Committee bill. That was the bill I voted on.
Mr. Gales, 30 seconds.
A lot of people believe that this is going to, by what it says, is going to raise a lot of taxes and get rid of a lot of things, tax benefits that we have, such as paint home interest, tax breaks, and things of that nature. Is that accurate?
Well, I'm not sure that's totally accurate. You know, this is a proposal to discuss the issue. Again, we have a tendency to get elected and not be willing to discuss the issue. 38 of us want to discuss the issue. And you two people are seeking this job, and I just want to remember, I'm not with inside the box. This is relative outside the box. It was hailed as a great concept of being able to discuss the problems of this country. And that's the reason I voted for it, and I don't apologize for it, because the sooner we start talking about it, and the sooner people start saying, yes, I am part of the problem, let's solve it. And that's the reason I voted for it.
Congressman Young, your turn to ask a question.
Well, I just want to ask either one of them, I don't care, how do you make a bill in Congress? What do you do? What's the steps?
I'm not 100% familiar with the entire process, as I'm sure not everyone is familiar with the entire process before getting in. but I'm pretty sure that it's something that that can be learned relatively quickly. Obviously, you'd have to in order to present a bill.
Brief comment, Congressman?
Well, yeah, and that's the reason I think I'm good at my job, and I'm trying to not put these people down. This is very difficult. I was blessed to serve as a state legislator, as a House member, and a Senate, so I had some idea of how to play the game and how to work on the field. When I went back to Washington, D.C., and the very second day I was there, after we started discussing the Trans-Alaskan Pipeline, that bill started in the House, and it finished in my conference because I put the one provision in that bill that allowed no lawsuits. Now, I was privileged, and I will tell you, God bless me, because I didn't expect that, but I did it. And I'm just suggesting both of you gentlemen should understand that this is not an easy job. It's not about the applause. It's not about your idea, I'm going to change the world. You got to understand where to put the nails and what kind of hammer to drive that type of nail in that hole to make sure it sticks. And I've been able to do that, and I'm going to continue to do it because I have the ambition, I have the knowledge, and I have the know-how, and I know how to get the job done.
John Cox, your second question. Mr. Cox, you have a second question if you want to ask one of these?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Oh, you don't have a second question? Okay, Mr. Gales, do you have a second question?
No.
Congressman Young, you want to ask a second question to keep us going here?
No, this is fine. I'm excited. I do like what I hear from these candidates. I admire them. I would say one of them is a little further right than I am, but they're pretty close to where I am, and I do admire what they've been able to do. And I don't object to anybody running for this seat if they got ideas and thoughts and knowledge and willing to work at it. And you will learn. I'll give you, tell you how to do this a little later.
Okay. Now we'll go to a section where the host and moderator, myself, is going to ask a few questions. I'm the first. This will be the same question for all three of you. All three of you have 45 seconds to answer. We're going to start with you, Mr. Cox, then you, Mr. Gales, and you, Mr. Young. There's been some discussion in Washington, D.C. about raising the age for eligibility to Social Security. Now, most of the people who propose this don't say we're going to do it right now or it's going to change for people my age, but it would change in a number of years. Would you favor or oppose raising the age of eligibility for Social Security, Mr. Cox?
Well, I'd have to say it doesn't matter. Okay? And when I say it doesn't matter is this country is financially broke. And no matter what we do, unless we balance the budget, all these other issues aren't going to matter. We need to balance the budget right now. And we're going to have to make sacrifices across the board. And until we balance this budget, Social Security, Medicare, everything else will not matter.
Mr. Gales.
With all due respect, to the folks out there that are listening that have to depend on this, it does matter to them right now. But there's ideas out there, and I know one of the ideas is to raise the age by 2 months every few years. So folks that are retiring in let's say 2014 or 2016 will have to add another 2 months, so 65 and 2 months before they can start collecting benefits. And this is said to actually save quite a bit of money as far as Social Security goes, but we still need to work on actually fixing the problem. But that's just a quick measure that we can take.
Thank you. Mr. Young.
Has to be raised. I don't know how many people remember that the 65 was passed in 1933 for a reason, the Social Security. By the way, it was a scam. When I say it was a tax bill. They picked 65 because the average age at that time was 64. So 65, nobody really could collect it. And so we live a lot longer now. And we work a lot longer. We can contribute a lot longer. So it has to be raised. And I don't know what gives it done immediately. I can't say that. Or is it done, as the gentleman said, in 2 months or every 2 years, that type thing. But we have to face up. If we want it solvent for the future generations, then we have to raise that age. And when I say it was a scam, it was a tax scam. We raised that money. We sold it. I wasn't there. I was born that year. We sold it as a retirement, but in reality, we raised the money we collected from the workers, and then the Congress spent it, and they're still spending it, and that's wrong.
Okay. In this round, Mr. Gales will go first, Mr. Young will go second, and Mr. Cox will go third. The question is this, gentlemen. Congressman Paul Ryan, and there have been others, have suggested that we ought to turn the Medicare system into a voucher system rather than a direct payment to physicians, hospitals, et cetera, from the federal government. Would you favor turning Medicare into a voucher system, Mr. Gales?
I would.
Please explain.
I think that it'll get rid of a lot of the red tape because the Medicare process is just so convoluted, as most things that the government actually presents are. But the voucher system, I think, will be a more simple process to take versus what we're doing right now.
Mr. Young.
I would say no, and I say that because I do agree with the paperwork. We're talking about a hypothetical question. Is that the problem? Would the voucher system solve it? I don't always agree with Mr. Ryan. He's a dear friend of mine. I argue that Medicare itself has to be looked at in total. To give you a case example, why in the world, when I was 65, I automatically, Medicare becomes my principal insurance. When I've been paying into health insurance for 40 years, two different forms, all of a sudden they're off the hook. Now, why is that? I haven't understood that. Nobody can give me the answer. So a whole system ought to be looked at. Vouchers could be a part of it. Right now, I'd say no.
Mr. Cox.
I'd have to agree with Mr. Young. I'd say no. Anytime that you, what's going to happen is you're going to allow an individual to shop around. Now, the issue is trying to find doctors that will accept those vouchers. Okay. Do you trust the government right now? It's hard enough to get paid as it is.
Thank you. This is our final question, and this will start this time. We'll start with Mr. Young, go to Mr. Cox, and then Mr. Gales. Mr. Young, are we funding the space program adequately? It's been much in the news here recently with the rover. Are we funding the space program adequately?
I don't think we are, but that's another question Mr. Cox and I agree with. We have to, can we afford it? But I do think we're shortening our vision again about where we're going. Let's not kid ourselves. I've watched in my lifetime us being flying single engine airplanes. It took you 19 hours to go to California. Double engine airplanes taking us 18 hours. We've gone to that. We have a new aircraft that was launched yesterday from U-2 bomber that goes to Washington, D.C. to New York in 1 hour and 18 minutes. We've had people on the moon. We are now have a rover that's on Mars, I believe, is looking around. To retract that, then we're not looking down the road, but we have to be able to afford it. And I agree with Mr. Cox about the budget and Mr. Gales about the budget, but people forgetting the only way you can balance this budget is not by cutting all things. It's by controlling the spending and producing more real wealth. And we become a consumptive nation. We buy for everything from overseas. We don't make it here. And we're not utilizing our resources. You can't balance this budget until we do that. If we have a good, strong economy, then we can have the space program.
Thank you. Mr. Cox.
I think we're wasting the money on the missions right now. This, like I keep reiterating, this country's broke. Financially broke, and until we correct the balance our budget, nothing else is going to matter.
Okay. And Mr. Gales.
This is going to go back to the budget. We are in a bad situation right now. And, you know, what we need to start doing is actually looking at maybe our tax system as a way of gaining more resources or financial resources. Such as creating a flat tax, which would probably collect more tax money than we do now because of all the tax shelters. That would free up a lot more money for us to spend on things that we would like to progress in. So we're not funding it the way we should, but we can't because we can't afford it.
Okay, we're going to return to our panel of reporters. They will ask questions for each of you, starting with Mr. Cox. You will have 45 seconds to respond, and then if another member of the panel wishes to jump in and comment on your answer of the issue, we'll try and take you as quickly as we can. Let's go to Lori Townsend for her question for Mr. Cox.
Mr. Cox, you've been talking quite a bit about the budget and our deficit. What should the country do to reduce the deficit? Cuts and tax increases? Cuts only? What would you cut? And name a couple things that Congress could do immediately.
First thing is we need to get the federal government out of the private sector's way. They've implemented so many red tape, so much red tape that any small business owner will realize that they can't expand. Myself as a small business owner, I can't hire more employees because of the simple fact that I don't know what my tax credits or my tax rates are going to be. I don't know. I have to deal with environmental impacts. Let's take care of those red tapes first. Let's get them out of the way, get the federal government out of the private sector, and let us run with it. We will create wealth when we expand our jobs. If I hire three or four more individuals to work for me, that's three or four more individuals that are not collecting unemployment, people that are paying into the Social Security system. Federal government just needs to get out of the way and let the private sector do its job.
Either one of the other candidates wish to comment on this matter?
Well, again, I agree with Mr. Cox. We have 1,850,000 laws that were never voted on, never vetted by the people, never voted on legislatively, passed by the bureaucracy. Very easy to do. All you have to do is go in. They write this law out. We have them facing this in the last small business, any type of big business, state governments, city governments, all the same thing. Creates no wealth. It's all consumptive. And that's what we have to stop. I've tried to do this. I'm getting more interest in it. It's very difficult because they're ingrained, as I call an incestuous group of bureaucrats that say, we can do what we want to do. You can't fire us. And in turn, they will pass regulation and affect the ability for the private business to employ people.
Okay. Let's go to Daisha Eaton for Mr. Gales.
Mr. Gales, when you work for Alaska, you work for a state that has, I believe, more Native people than any other state. What do you think about tribal powers? Too much or not enough?
I think they're fine. My wife is a member of a tribe in Arizona called the Pascua Yaqui tribe. And I was a police officer down there for a time, so I've had a little bit of experience with tribal authority and tribal powers. But I think they're just fine the way they are right now. You know, this state does a lot for its Native peoples and has done a lot to empower its Native peoples. So, no, I don't have a problem with the tribal powers right now as they are.
Anybody else want to comment? Okay, Lori?
Mr. Young, the lack of law enforcement, sexual assault rates, domestic violence are perennial issues in rural Alaska. Suicide rates remain at least twice the national average. What can the federal government do to help these struggling communities?
Well, again, I'm not sure the federal government can solve this. This did not accelerate until the federal government got involved with their social world programs, their welfare programs, their, you know, all the programs where people didn't have to, very frankly, work too hard. And I'd like to give them more authority within their villages. And I say that because I do think that they should have a right to prosecute individuals that have committed a crime. And I know this may go against some people's grain, but the reality is I was the mayor of Fort Yukon, and we ran a very good town. I had a very large policeman as my dearest friend, and I had a nice police magistrate, and you didn't get out of line. And I was actually accused of harassment, et cetera, because we were taking care of our crime problem. Nowadays, it is a joke. They are flown to Fairbanks. They're going put in jail. This is a vacation. I don't think that's right. I think the time should be served where they commit the crime. And the Native villages can do this on their own, and it should be backed by the state.
Either one of you gentlemen wish to comment on this particular topic? Okay. Daisha Eaton for Mr. Cox.
Mr. Cox, what can the Veterans Administration do to improve services to veterans in Alaska, considering our geography specifically?
Well, one of the things that we need to do is bring more doctors up here. How about our educational system? We'll send students to schools to become doctors. And to pay off their loan, let's bring them back up here and have them work in the VA to pay off their school debt, to give them greater access. I know as a veteran that if I have to go see a doctor, I can take 3-4 weeks before I can get the service that I need.
Either one of you other gentlemen wish to comment on this topic?
We've made progress. We can make better progress because we have some tremendous medical facilities that for some reason the VA doesn't recognize, and a vet should go into any area of this state and pick a hospital or a doctor of his choice clearest to his area that could be served. And have the VA pay that back, the charge, instead of flying them to Anchorage, to flying them to Seattle, to flying them to wherever they want to fly them, or can't do it. So that's crucially important that we allow this to occur. We've made some progress in that arena, but not nearly as much as we could.
Okay. Let's go to Lori Townsend.
Mr. Gales, you have said that you plan to lead the way to simplify the tax code. What would you do immediately, and how would you get others to follow your ideas?
Right. Well, you know, there's a lot of great ideas out there, but you have to start a real serious debate about it. And I don't think that they're really getting deeply involved in actually trying to figure this issue out. So make it a huge issue. Make it a national issue like it truly is. And leading the way just by partnering up with other folks who are actually trying to solve the problem. I can get with people that know a lot more about the details of the tax system than I do, if they can even figure it out. And that's the main thing. So make something simple. Draft something simple. If you make this much money, you should pay 12.5%, and that's it. Leave it at that. So just simplify the tax process. Step in, lead, make it a national issue.
Either of the other candidates wish to comment on this issue?
10% flat rate. You're right, Mr. Gales. Absolutely. Simplify it. Everybody would know exactly what's happening. Right now, it's with this president, he wants to tax the rich. Who pays more taxes, the rich or the non-paying taxpayers or the middle class? Right now, the rich are paying percentage-wise a lot more taxes, and people forget that. You can take all the rich people's money, take it all away from them. It runs this country for 7 days. We carry the burden, the middle class. And I'm saying let's look at the new tax system so we work and get a percentage from everybody that makes money. We know exactly how much money it is. It simplifies it. You can't go to jail if you make a mistake. You don't have a bunch of accountants telling you what you can and cannot do. You don't have these loopholes and money doesn't go overseas. Let's just go to a flat rate. And I've introduced that 3 times, and I'm still supporting that concept.
Okay, let's go for our final question in this segment to Daisha Eaton.
Mr. Young, what can you do to help the Coast Guard have a more meaningful presence in the Arctic?
Well, the main thing is money. I've introduced in this past the idea of a port in the Arctic, which is very complex and shallow water. And again, it goes back to money. I have argued with the Coast Guard that they want to build new icebreakers. We're not going to appropriate the money for them, $1 billion. I've asked them to actually look into leasing, and I believe it's more economical and more efficient. Icebreakers made in the United States, not foreign icebreakers. The Coast Guard is going to get more money this year because of the Arctic. And we're looking at possibly, and this is what hurts some people's feelings, including the state, taking a percentage of any oil developed there and put it into a fund for the Coast Guard so they can upgrade their facilities in the Arctic. Because we had over 7,000 ships last year go through the Arctic with no supervision or no navigational aids, etc. And there is a potential for really, I would call, a collision factor, a maritime accident. It should not occur. Mm-hmm. So I'm supporting that concept for the Arctic. But I can't forget the main issue of Coast Guard is search and rescue and fish interdiction in the Bering Sea and in the Gulf of Alaska. We have to make sure they're funded for that, too.
Either of the other gentlemen wish to comment on this, Mr. Young's answer?
It's simple. We're okay. Behind the eight ball on this. We need to help the Coast Guard out now. Let's get those icebreakers out there right away.
Our final round of questions before we go to the final statements of our candidates, our lightning round questions, and that is, these are yes-no questions. I realize philosophers could spend a lot more time on the answers, but what we have time for are less yes and no. And we'll start with Mr. Cox, then we'll go to Mr. Gales and Mr. Young. Should the federal government fund private charter schools? Yes or no?
No.
Mr. Gales?
No.
No.
Mr. Young, no. This time we'll start with Mr. Gales. Many members of Congress and many candidates for Congress have signed a tax pledge that they will never, ever raise taxes under any circumstance, a lifetime pledge. Would you sign such a pledge, yes or no?
No.
Mr.
No.
Young?
No. No.
Okay, Mr. Cox?
No.
You said no, okay. This is a matter that's quite frequently in the news and quite frequently debated. The Roe versus Wade abortion decision by the Supreme Court that makes abortion legal in this country, should it be overturned? We'll start with you, Mr. Young.
Yes.
Mr. Cox.
Pro-life.
Mr. Gales.
Yes.
Okay. Now we'll start with Mr. Cox again. Should we increase or decrease our military spending as we reduce the size of the federal government?
Increase.
Increase.
I'll increase it.
Okay. As you know, we'll start with Mr. Gales. As you know, the United States has been in Korea for more than 60 years. Do you think we'll be in Afghanistan 60 years from now? Mr. Gales.
No.
Mr. Young?
No.
And Mr. Cox?
Yes.
Okay. Now we'll go to our closing statements. They are of 1 minute each. And our first speaker is Mr. Cox.
Well, I want to take this time to say thank you very much for having us here. And for those that, like I said, that don't know me, I'm not a politician. I consider myself a statesman like our founding fathers. This was not meant to be a profession. It was meant to be a civic duty. And I truly believe that.
Okay, thank you very much, John Cox. Mr. Gales, you have 1 minute if you wish to avail yourself.
No, I'm going to make this short. There's an old saying that says you can't do something, you can't expect something to change if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, essentially. Or the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again but expecting a different result. If Congress hasn't been doing a great job for the last 6 to 8 years, we can't continue to put the exact same people in the same positions to continue to make the same bad decisions.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Young, a 1 minute closing statement, sir.
Thank you for this chance, or not only the chance to address the public, but to have a KAKM put this program on, because I think this makes my 40th some time that I've been on this program, and I want to congratulate the station itself. I'm asking you as Alaskans to let me represent you again, as I've been able to do, and I believe honorably, I believe effectively, enforce the state of Alaska. It's important we have the experience, the knowledge, and frankly the statesmanship to know how to get things done for Alaska. I've proven that over and over again, and I deeply appreciate your support in me and your belief in me, because I have done the job and you know it, and I ask you for your vote again in the August primary, and of course, in the general election to represent you, the great state of Alaska.
Thank you, candidates. Stay with us, as you will now hear from the Libertarian candidate for Congress.